This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Today with sex columnist, advice columnist, Dan Savage. We're talking all about his brand new book, and we're so excited, aren't we, Monet?
We're so excited for this fabulous episode.
We're so excited, and we just can't hide it. We're constipated, and we really hate it, and we hope that someone is into that. A laxative fetish. Oh, for the holidays, we've all been overeating, but we want to make sure we're nice and clean.
A laxative fetish, Jesus Christ.
Yes, mama, get with it. Well, Dan has a new... Dan Savage, you know what? We didn't even say this. Dan Savage created the It Gets Better campaign. So he's not just a noted sex advice columnist. He is also a noted famous activist. And we're thrilled to have him.
Yeah, it's going to be a great episode. Dan has great advice, y'all. Let me tell you, this man knows his sugar honey iced tea. He's been having sex for a long time. And he is very open about experiences and just points of view and advice that I know I have never thought about to think about with sex and love. And if you think you know everything, just listen and maybe you open your mind, because it's definitely a very, very fun, interesting conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, Ebony and Irony listeners, we have a very beautiful and special guest here.
I'm the co-host every week, Monet, but thank you.
I didn't say repugnant, delicious, and repugnant.
You
and
were right,
salacious.
Delicious.
Whore. I said a beautiful man. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the fabulous Dan Savage.
Hey, Lady Bunny. Hey, Monet. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being
here. You are so welcome. And for those who do not know, Dan Savage is a sex advice columnist for, I'd say, 30 years, right, Dan?
Yeah, I've been writing Savage Love for 30 years, my syndicated sex advice column.
In The Stranger, which is the Seattle publication. And now you have a book out that combines a lot of your advice, great advice, on sex and relationships, dating and mating, exes and extras. Mm-hmm. So could you give me some advice on Monet? Because she is very, very extra today.
I'm extra every day, honey. I'm extra where it counts.
It's usually romantic relationships that I referee. And are you guys coming out about something that
absolutely
everyone wants to know?
Absolutely not.
Well, first of all, you called us guys, and that's going to be transphobic.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, my God. Do not pay her any attention, Dan. Bunny has not had her meds for the better part of this last decade, so she's a little loopy today.
So how did you pick from all of the years of advice to put this book together? I mean, there must have been, was it like a long editing process?
Well, I looked back over the columns and just picked up the, you know, it's not a collection of columns or Q&As with readers. It's essays, new essays about sort of themes and topics that I've been toying with and developing for 30 fucking years in Savage Love. My ideas about monogamy, my ideas about open relationships, my ideas about making a monogamous, long-term, committed, closed relationship work for the long term, the kinds of compromises or accommodations or improvisations you're going to need to deploy to keep that sexy and hot, that spark, kind of keep the spark alive bullshit that everyone who writes about relationships has to write about. But I write about it in a very different way because I write about it from a kind of gay man's perspective.
Well, you know, which I find to be very interesting because obviously I feel like gay men, we just think about relationships much differently than hetero folk and even lesbians and other queer people. Like, gay men are very specific in the way we love and how that works for us. So to hear it from you, someone who has obviously done the groundwork and has a lot of knowledge thereof, I am very excited to read this book and I want to learn a few things.
Well, one of the things that we can learn about gay relationships compared to lesbian or straight relationships is that the data, you know, despite our reputation for, you know, being the flighty ones or the ones who have a problem with commitment because we're gay and there's so much dick out there and we're men, gay relationships are more stable
than
opposite sex or lesbian relationships.
What does stable mean, though? Like, they last longer or like what?
They last longer. The studies show that gay men, once they marry or commit, are likelier to stay together than opposite sex or same sex female couples.
No,
it's true. It's true. And you know what? And you know what I think it is? This has been my hobby horse for years. I've been like, I don't want everyone to be non-monogamous. I just want monogamous people to know that monogamy is hard. Uh-huh. And one of the things that all the research into gay male relationships shows is that our relationships are the least likely to be monogamous. People who are more likely to be monogamous are straight, most likely are lesbian. The most unstable relationships, lesbians,
really
likeliest to break up, less likely to break up, straight people, least likely to break up, gay male couples. And it's not despite being non-monogamous. I think it's because our relationships are mostly non-monogamous. It's a stabilizing influence in our lives.
Interesting.
If you cheat.
It's not cheating. Not it's open, Bunny.
It's open. Okay. Well, so you... Now, Monet, I sounded a little surprised, you know, to hear that gay relationships are the longest lasting. And maybe I am too. But also, I mean, I guess maybe that's because we think of a lot of gay, quote, relationships as not quite relationships yet, but just tricking, you know, hooking up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what
true.
You consider a relationship because that doesn't last long. That lasts, you know, 15 minutes or an hour.
That's often
bitch,
how
Bunny,
gay men...
Bitch, you can have sex for an hour. Bitch, please. Maybe maybe 4 minutes. Don't even kid your fucking self, bitch.
Can you not use this wonderful interview with the legendary Dan Savage to you know, show everyone that listens to this podcast that you cannot get enough of my sex life? Because that's where you really, that's your whole goal in doing this podcast with me. I mean, the sad thing is for me is it's hard because straight Viagra. Women, gay women, men, trans, they all want me. And it's just hard for me. I mean, I'm always turning everyone down. Have you ever encountered anyone like that, Dan?
Yeah, there are some people out there who are in great demand. And so it's probably better for everyone else that person not settle down and just make themselves widely available for one-offs and tricks and one-night stands.
Oh, baby, it's very wide, honey.
You know,
yes.
Another secret, one of the things that I've been writing about sex and relationships as a gay man, writing primarily for straight people. My advice column is for straight people. It's about straight sex primarily. And I've really watched over the last 3 decades is gay relationships got quote-unquote straighter and straight relationships got gayer, which just proves there was nothing gay about the gay lifestyle. It was all we were allowed. And there was nothing straight about the straight lifestyle. It was what they were compelled to do. Mm-hmm. And once you freed people to make their own choices, some gay men want to marry and have kids and settle down, not necessarily be monogamous, but have kids, settle down, get married. Other gay men don't. But some straight people don't want to settle down either.
Yeah.
And if you look at straight life and culture now... But if you look at straight life and culture now, so much of it is what Lady Bunny and I remember as gay life decades ago. They just changed the names of everything. Mm-hmm. We had tricks. They have friends with benefits. We had one night stands or tricking. They call it hookups, right? Mm-hmm. And they took everything from gay life and just renamed it, including like living in urban areas, getting married later in life. And so, yeah, they're a lot gayer and we're a lot straighter.
Now. Well, I have a question. So why did you find yourself catering, like writing for hetero straight couples as opposed to queer couples?
Because I certainly give tons of advice to queer people and queer couples in my column and on my show. Yeah. But when the column started, it was really a joke. I was writing in a straight newspaper as a gay man giving sex advice to straight people about sex. And I was going to, the idea was, you know, in 1990, 91, I was going to treat straight people and straight sex with the same contempt and revulsion that straight advice columnists had always treated gay people and gay sex with. You know, I grew up reading Ann Landers and the Playboy Advisor, and they would sometimes respond to gay people, but they always made sure to let us know that we were icky and that they were a little squicked out having to touch our letter. And so I was sort of treating straight people like that, and it was a joke, but straight people loved it, and it became a real advice column by accident.
So when you say that that gay people are now allowed to do certain things, obviously marriage would be a big one of those things, or, you know, having kids, and then maybe also the straight people who don't want to be monogamous, maybe that would explain straight people getting in touch with that would explain the high divorce rates that I've seen over my lifetime.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Divorce rates now are at kind of historic lows. That 50% of marriages end in divorce stat is a little outdated. People are less likely to marry now, which could be a good thing or a bad thing.
Because of COVID.
because of COVID.
But they can't break up because of COVID.
Yeah, there's some theories that people are less likely to marry now because they're so economically insecure and the world is such a howling nightmare. Others argue that people who didn't want to marry and were sort of forced to in the past, that being the people who got divorced, aren't getting married anymore, and that's good for marriage.
Can I just pursue one other thing? You mentioned another thing about gay sex versus straight sex, in that gays are forced to communicate, and by that, straight people aren't, about sex. I mean, that's the whole purpose of Grindr, is that you state, this is what I've got, this is what I'm into doing sexually, and straight people don't really have that.
I've always said
in their
that
culture,
if
right?
you had to look your mom in the eye when you were 15 years old and tell her you suck dicks, you put penises in your mouth, asking your boyfriend or asking Grindr for what you really want is not as scary as telling your mom who you are, right? You know, when I had to tell my mom...
No, I sucked her...
I told my...
When I was 15, I sucked her dick.
Oh, my God.
I sucked my mom's dick when I was 15. Yes, honey.
That's really compelling. I should write a column about that if it's true. But, you know, I think gay people are better at sex than straight people are. Not because we're magic, but because we have to communicate. You know, when straight people go to bed together for the first time, the whole conversation usually ends with consent. Yes, we're going to have sex. Now we don't need to talk about it because it's going to be penis and vagina sex. When two gay men go to bed or two males go to bed for the first time or two women and they get to consent, that's the beginning of the whole conversation. What happens now? Who fucks who can't be assumed when there's two guys with cis guys with penises in bed each other. They're going to have to keep talking and negotiating. And one thing, of all the things that straight people steal from gay culture, the one thing I really think that they should steal and they haven't are what I've always called the four magic words. What are you into? Which is something that gay men ask each other directly or implicitly.
First date. First message.
What are you into?
And
when I was like 16 years old and gay and just becoming sexually active, that was such an empowering question to be asked. Mm-hmm. And straight people don't ask each other that. Women aren't asked that question by straight guys. It's just assumed that she's into getting fucked, otherwise she wouldn't be there, right? For sex. I could consent to sex when I was 17 years old and say, I don't want to be fucked. I don't want to have anal. And the gay guy I was going to bed with would be like, great, we can have oral. We can mutually masturbate. We can roll around. We can do something else. And so it was possible for me to like be sexually active, you know, at the height of the AIDS epidemic without taking risks. And anal then to me represented too great a risk. And it'd be okay with my sex partners. Imagine if a straight guy was going to bed with a woman and she said, I'm not into vaginal. I'm just into mutual masturbation. He would not be okay with that. He should be. He'll get laid more often if he's okay with that.
Right. Well, what say to you to gays that hate that? Like, stop with the what are you into? Like, what do you say to those gays? Or those queer folk?
I say you're really fucking stupid. Take the win. That we're forced to communicate with each other. It makes us better at sex, makes our sex lives and our relationships more interesting, more rewarding. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people get too good at asking for it, or sometimes people get too glib about it, and they sort of lose sight of the enormity and I think the importance and the terror of sex, which we should always be, I think, thinking about. Yeah. But on the average, in the aggregate, that we have to talk to each other, that we have to negotiate the sex we're going to have, that we can't default to gendered sex role expectations during intercourse makes us better at it, makes us better sex partners, and also, I think, better partners.
Monet, when people ask, you know, when they say to you, or not to you, but you hear of others saying, or to you, I don't know, why are you asking me what I'm into? I don't like that. I mean, this question is for Dan, whoever. Do you think that's because there is a stigma for being into certain things, like bottom shaming?
Yeah, oh, for
so
sure.
If someone isn't into bottoming, they don't want to come out and just say it. Listen, I'm like the least PC person in the world, but the one thing I do think is fascinating is the idea of bottom shaming. Honey, it takes two to tango. If you want to fuck, there's gotta be a
right.
hole. And it's like, and I put something up on Facebook about this, and I thought the one answer was so hilarious because the guy said, "Well, honey, the only people bottom shaming or other bottoms because tops are looking
right.
for bottoms."
It's this weird conundrum, and I'm like, but there are tops looking like I don't understand what's the shaming. I mean, the only obviously is the stereotypical, if you're a bottom, you're more femme, or you are like all of those stupid tropes that go along with being a bottom. But I think it's 2021, about to be 2022, bitch. We know that that's not a thing. Like, everyone likes it. Bitch, I have fucked so many men in drag, and you know what? They were all fucking bottoms for me. All right. They wanted my big black drag queen dick in their assholes.
But let's a shout out here for the dom bottoms and the sub tops,
yes,
who are also
honey.
Out there in the world, and
a blouse, you know, honey.
Some you know, the
a
people
top.
A blouse
and I want
a feminine top. A blouse.
I always
want to
complicate these conversations.
Did you know that term? Did you know
femme
that term,
top?
Dan?
Oh
feminine
yeah.
top is
oh,
a blouse.
God.
A blouse. Oh,
I didn't
know
that either. But I love it, and I love femme tops. I've always I wrote things 30 years ago, 25 years ago for This American Life on NPR about I was always really attracted to femme guys. I never understand the guys who are like, oh, he opened his mouth and a purse fell out, because I was always like, great, more room for my dick in there now that the purse fell out.
Dad.
But the thing I want to say about bottoming and bottom shame is that yeah, it's often a lot of bottoms who are bottom shaming each other. But there's something hot to the shame in bottoming, that this thing that like makes us feel bad and guilty about ourselves before we like accept ourselves as gay, we sometimes want to like save just a little bit of it because it's arousing, because what's risky or wrong or transgressive is sexy. And to like reinforce this a little bit, that there's something shameful about bottoming. I do not believe there's anything shameful about bottoming, but to hold on to like some, to be able to tap into that when you want to can be very erotic.
Okay, I could see
tap
that.
Tap into it, indeed. But so this is something I never understood. Guys that would claim that they are tops, but then would see someone really hot and say, I would bottom for him. Now, I'm not saying that they should be turned on by whatever they want to be turned on by, but what you just said, it attaches like, well, I'm not giving up that part of me. There's a hotness. There's a, you know, whatever to that. But it just seems to me like, is that person really a bottom and using how hot the guy is as an excuse to bottom and shaming themselves? I always thought that was so weird. There's other guys that are like, you know, oh, I like to top, but only like for a, you know, only like top a masculine guy. And I'm like, so you want to top a masculine guy that, you know, looks like they don't want to. It's confusing to me.
Well, people are very complicated sexually, and you can't pin anybody down. I think often what guys who identify as tops, who aren't always tops, some guys are rounding themselves down from verse top to top. What they're saying at that moment is whatever he wanted, even that. Not something right. I would usually do. And I don't know, like, they're, I'm going to use gross examples.
But it's also, it's a little bit of that internalized misogyny where you're like, you, bottom shaming comes from sometimes, I think, you know, you're the shaming the person who's in a passive role, in a feminine role, the role of the woman, you know, so that's what I always thought was weird about it. It's like, if you want to put your dick in a hole, how are you going to shame the hole?
Yeah, it does seem self-defeating. I do want to speak up for the tops quickly, though. There, you know, there's in the complaining about top privilege all the time, that discourse, it sometimes feel like there's top shaming going on there. And, you know, oh, what? bottoms have
what
to clean
top
out.
Shaming?
Bottoms have to clean out and bottoms uh-huh. have to watch what they eat for dinner and bottoms have to uh-huh. do this and bottoms have to do that and tops uh-huh. take it for granted. Bottoms get something out of bottoming too. Most
oh,
guys
sure.
who want to get fucked really want to get fucked. The way people
true.
Talk about it makes it sound like the bottom is just like taking it for the team and suffering for the top and gets nothing out of it. In my experience as mostly a top, like it's
that is true. You meet those like, bottoms where they literally the entire they will take 14 raw dicks and they just want like I you see that I'm like and they like they can't get enough. And I see that.
Right.
But
yeah, they're
I
not
will
doing
say,
the
but
top
tops
a favor
are,
when they get fucked. It's themselves. They want to get fucked. It's what they want from the top, not just what the top wants from them.
Well, I think it's also the top. So you see that they come into, they're trying to fuck and they don't want to do the work to like fucking eat your ass or open the, or get you relaxed. They're like, oh, great, you're here. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Fuck you. It's like, no, bitch. Like,
no.
That is the privilege that a lot of tops, they have. They're like, they think that they don't have to work to do anything. They just show up with a hard dick.
Is that top privilege or is that just bad at sex? Like
you're right. Maybe
someone who doesn't know how a butthole works, that you can't just drop a dick in it, that you have to like kind of earn it.
Yeah. I mean, it might be someone who thinks that, you know, as a lot of drag queens, you know, trans people will end up dating straight identified or whatever. So it makes them feel like they are still straight if they're just like taking, even if they're doing it with someone who is male or born male or whatever, you know, that makes them feel that they are still the man in the relationship and they could still be straight. It was just like, they could still be straight if some guy sucked
we
them
know,
off. You know what I mean?
I did drag for a decade. We called them panty chasers. We always knew the difference between the guy who knew who he was, but was just into trans women or gay men in drag. And there was something mm-hmm. about that tension there, but he was open about it and gay identified, but into a certain kind of type of gay drag queen or trans woman. Not that I'm calling trans women men, but
yeah.
And you knew the guys who were messy, the guys who would like make out with you in a corner in drag and you would remind them that you had a dick and they would go, no, you don't, baby. Those
guys, you know,
you didn't want to go home with. They wanted dick, but they wanted you to pretend that you didn't have one.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Even as you fucked them with it. And
that's happened
there's
to me.
No more dangerous place in the world for a gay man to be than in a room with a straight identified messy closet case during his refractory period. That's Ooh. When gay guys, that's when trans women get beaten to death by intimate partners.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
It might be hot to think about that straight guy who's so conflicted but has to have your ass. But I've had friends beaten up in that situation and I wouldn't go into it.
Yeah.
No, it almost happened to me when I was younger and met someone at the pyramid. Honey, I was always, you know, over 6 feet in heels, much less the wig. Brought this guy home. We were both drunk, took off our clothes and got in bed. And he jumped up and turned the lights on. And, you know, as soon as, I took my panties off and I was like, well, honey, well, what did you expect? You were in a drag bar right. at the pyramid. But then he jumped up. And so we had a little argument. I said, well, you know what? Jumping up and turning the lights on kind of killed my mood. So hit it and kind of shoved him out the door and slammed it. He almost broke the door down. Some skinheads had to come and protect me that were living upstairs because he's like, and he knew that I was a drag right. queen. He just, he couldn't let on his own mind that I was a drag queen because I was never passable.
I looked like a giant Barbie doll when I was doing drag.
And I want to see pictures of Dan in drag. I'm going to Google this right now.
There's a couple
what
out
was your
there.
Name?
It was before everybody had cell phone cameras. My name was Helvetica Bull. Old. When I had black hair, when I had blonde hair, I was Futura Bold Oblique, Helvetica's sister who married a Greek shipping tycoon. The straight guys would hit on me because I looked like, at that point, you know, in the 90s, I looked like the Penthouse magazine girls they'd been jacking off to in the 70s and 80s. And they, the classic for me was this guy was like, I would let you suck me off in a club. And I looked at him and was like, I just put all this makeup on. Tell you what, you suck me off. How about that instead? And he did.
Work, Dad, I'm obsessed with you. Okay, wait. So going back to our early conversation. So what say you to a couple, like, because it's a, all of my gay relationship friendships, they're all in open relationships. Not a single one is closed. I can't think of a single one. But what about one that's transitioning to openness? When is there, because Bob and I have a podcast together on Sibling Rivalry, and we often talk about open relationships and what that looks like. And he's of the mind that you should open up your relationship literally from day one. From the day one you meet, it's open. Do you think that, I mean, obviously there's no right or wrong way, but what is your advice? Do you say, monogamous for a little bit, then open it up, or open it from the beginning? Like, what is your thought?
My thoughts are complicated. I've seen both work. You know, my husband and I were monogamous for 4 years, and we've been non-monogamous for 24 years. So we had a period of sustained monogamy where it was clear that we were really into each other. And not getting, you know, emotionally into each other, but not sexually into each other. So seeking sex outside the relationship to make the relationship work, which can sometimes happen. It can be a crutch. And if you want your primary partner to also be into you, you know, a period of, if not, you know, pre-agreed to or committed to monogamy, but effortless monogamy, like you kind of don't want to fuck anybody else for a while because you're infatuated with each other and getting to know each other and you're prioritizing each other early. I think that's usually how it happens. But I've seen the opposite happen. You know, I know guys who've met having four ways who never stopped having four ways and have been together for years and years and years and years. What works, works for the couple it worked for, or the throuple it worked for. And individual results may vary. You can't just say, if we make a monogamous commitment at first, it'll definitely work out for us, because that's how they work, those ones that work. Because there's just too many examples of all sorts of different ways working. What works for you works for you. People have to figure out what works for them and what makes them happy. But Terry and I did work for us. I would recommend it based on my own personal experience. But if you want to go a different way, go a different way.
I mean, to me, that makes the most sense. You're building up the love and the trust of the person. You're really into that person. To me, that makes the most sense. But, you know, like you said, to each their own. Whatever works for you. Whatever doesn't, won't.
But it should be the one thing that gay relationships have always had over straight ones is that monogamy is something we discuss and agree to, as opposed to an assumption we make about the relationship. It's opt-in.
Oh my God, true.
It's opt-in for us. And that's good. You know, when you're dating and it's casual, you shouldn't expect that it's monogamous. If you upgrade to boyfriends, that's usually a discussion then around whether you're going to be monogamous. And gay men have that discussion and straight people don't.
They just assume. That's so true. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not the most experienced in relationships, but there is a point when you first meet where it's like, it would feel like a betrayal because you're all about each other if you started sleeping with other people.
But it wouldn't feel like a betrayal of your partner. It'd almost feel like you're betraying yourself. Because the only person you want to be with right now is this person that you just met and you're falling in love with and you're infatuated with. And if you go chasing other dick, it's almost like it's a betrayal of them maybe, but it's also a betrayal of you and what you're capable of and what's possible.
But if they do it.
Yeah, you can experience it as a betrayal.
It's a betrayal of me.
But it ain't cheating in the absence of a monogamous...
I'm not saying that happened. I'm still really upset over it.
But it ain't cheating in the absence of a monogamous commitment. If you haven't made a monogamous commitment, it's not exclusive.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Dan...
I gave him $5.
This book is filled with so much advice, y'all, on sex and relationships and dating and mating and exes and all the extra shit that happened in sex and love. And honestly, if you, bitch, pick her up, like, just go through, read through, get your life, learn yourself some things. Honestly, I got myself a copy on Apple Books. I don't like physical books. I think that, not that physical books are not great. Everyone should buy the physical book, but having it digitally is really great. And I feel more empowered in my relationship, and I'm only a little bit in, but this is great, Dan. I'm so happy to read this.
Are there new trends that you've observed over the last few years? I mean, maybe they were always there, but I was never familiar with plushies until about maybe 15 years ago. And what do they do? And how do you know?
Well, plushies and furries have been around for a while. Plushies are people who are sexually attracted to stuffed animals. Furries, which is not necessarily a kink for some people, but kind of a community or an identity, are a different animal, a different fursuited animal. But, you know, people who are attracted to, it's almost like watching Big Mouth now, the character Jay, who has sex with his pillows, his anthropomorphized pillows. It's so genius. That's kind of what people do with plushies. That instead of a pillow with a hole cut in it that they have sex with, it's a stuffed animal that they enjoy having sex with. It's a form of objectosexuality. It was much discussed. It's after, not over the last couple of years, like 10, 15 years ago, people began talking about, 20 years ago, about plushies a lot. That's kind of when furries broke. It's when really when the internet began to be everywhere, it created communities out of what were extremely rare niche sexual kinks or fetishes. So, somehow suddenly all the furries could find each other. Somehow suddenly all the plushies could find each other. You know, there's probably 20 plushies in all of the Midwest. Well, now there's a plushie community around the world of hundreds, thousands of people who are on the internet, and we're able to form a community and an identity because the internet facilitated it. And you've seen that with all sorts of other niche kinks and sexual interests, and, you know, niche identities even.
Like masking.
Like masking.
Masking?
Masking. What's
which
masking?
Which is one of the it's like when you put on a like it's when you put on a full like latex mask, often of the opposite sex.
But is it KN95 though? Who are,
I don't know. I think it's thicker than that. I think it's thicker than N95. But no, this is a full mask with where your eyes pop out. You know, I guess you could breathe, but then they get in drag, and you know, often there's corsets and it's a bondage thing mixed in there too. But if you've seen, it was forwarded around the internet a lot.
Yeah.
Do you have any? Have you come across that?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, yes, I have. I have come across that. There's also now companies that are selling, you know, latex masks for different kind of male faces that are basically hoods that you pull over yourself, and you have a completely different look, identity. You can buy latex muscle suits, you know, if you want to see what it's like to be a muscle queen for an evening without ever having to go to the gym. That's now possible for folks. And
no, I'm wearing one. It doesn't work.
What I think is really interesting is the
science
technology.
Wouldn't go so far, Bunny.
The way we're folding technology into our erotic lives, you know, so many people, we're in the generation now where everybody's first sexual experience was mediated by technology, where they masturbated, they saw porn for the first time, or they masturbated and saw porn for years before they had a physical partner, before they kissed anybody. And they like find partners using technology, using their phones, and really that tech is becoming absorbed into our erotic imaginations, our erotic inner life in ways that are going to play out over the next couple of decades with the emergence of new kinks and new ways of being sexual online.
How do you feel about porn ruining sex? Because the thought process is that because porn is so accessible, you can have literally any fantasy you want on the internet, on your computer, and it's ruining having like person-to-person contact and sex.
They're calling it a sexual recession.
Well, you don't
right
have
now.
To meet anybody.
Yeah, you don't have to meet anybody. But you can have cyber sex with people. They're calling it a sex recession right now. There's all sorts of data pouring in showing that people are having less sex, that there are many people who've never had sex, never had a romantic partner, many of them male. It used to be that men, on average, had a higher number of sexual partners than women, and those numbers are now equal because men's are dropping so fast.
Wow.
And is that because guys are staying home and watching porn? Is that for reasons we don't yet know? And the research is currently being done. But I think there are people, because of pornography, who are opting out of the sexual meat marketplace and staying home. Mm-hmm. And we can look at that and say, oh, that's terrible. Or we can look at that and say, well, maybe at least some of those people, maybe a majority of those people, enjoy that more. And it allows them to express themselves in a more authentic way sexually than having to negotiate or compete for actual sex partners out in the world.
Or a safer.
And maybe a safer.
Or a safer way. I mean, I have not had sex since COVID began, and I was quite promiscuous for quite a few years, but I never really liked porn until now, because I feel like, you know, unlike meeting someone, which is fun, and, you know, your personalities and whatever, humors, the turn-ons, whatever, it's like, now I look at the porn, I'm kind of like, let's get it over. I don't really want anyone in my home. You know, I'm just not ready to do the sex thing and breathe the same air as someone. But I, of course, many people have warned that porn is hurting sex. I mean, feminists have always said that. And, you know, I did hook up with this guy on Craigslist in Miami. He was a younger
guy. Oh, so we're talking circa 2002.
Well, like I say, I haven't been active lately, but he was doing this thing where I was blowing him and he was saying no hands, and he kept, I was like, how do you know to say that? I'm like, you sound like you've been in a gay movie. This seemed like a little straight acting.
Well, that's not new. I remember having sex in Germany in the 80s when I lived in Germany. And like these guys who couldn't speak any English, who spoke German, would suddenly, when I was sucking their dicks, in perfect American accent and English, say, "You like that dick, don't you?"
Yeah,
suck that
for
cock,
sure.
Because they'd been watching so much porn. I don't want to downplay what's actually going on. Porn is mainstreaming some activities that are dangerous, like choking. That people see choking in porn, they see it as something pleasurable or enjoyable, and they see it being modeled in porn as not a negotiated extreme kink, but just as something you might do to a sex partner during sex that they will obviously enjoy because everyone in porn seems to like it. And then, 18, 19-year-old, very inexperienced people are busting that move and traumatizing sex partners who didn't expect to be choked out or throttled during sex. That's a problem with porn. I gotta say though that, the feminist critique of porn that I was familiar with, that we heard a lot about in the 80s and 90s in college campuses, that porn was the theory, rape was the practice, that turned out not to be true. And we have basically data to prove it, because we saw online porn come on in different states at different times. And wherever porn suddenly was easily available and ubiquitous, rates of sexual assault and sexual violence fell. They didn't rise. And one of the things that's uncomfortable to contemplate is that there are people out there who are now sitting at home masturbating, watching maybe extreme porn, maybe representations of non-consensual sexual activity in porn, who aren't out there raping anybody because they're staying at home now and fantasizing about it and jacking off instead. And porn is meeting a very dark need, but doing a social good at the same time. Porn seems to have helped bring down rates of sexual violence. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of choking, this is a little something I read in your book. One doesn't have anal sex with an ass full of shit for the same reason one doesn't have oral sex with a mouth full of food. It's uncomfortable and messy. Now Dan, you seem to have heard of everything. I do have sex with a mouth full of food. Come on. You ever heard of that? What are you talking about?
I haven't heard of that kink. It sounds messy and uncomfortable, but you do you.
Dan, have you ever heard of something called dope dick?
No, please tell me.
It's something that really gorgeous Latino straight males talk about, how their dick stays hard for hours and hours when they do heroin.
What?
Yikes.
Yeah.
Not worth the trade-off.
Okay, I guess this old whore just trumped Dan Savage, sex advice columnist. We have uncovered a new...
Have you ever heard of soaking, Dan?
Silking?
Soaking.
Oh, soaking. Yes, I have heard of soaking. The Mormon kids do it.
The Mormon kids. And it's like because having sex, I guess they see it as like going in and out in penetration. They like take their hard dick and just let it sit in the pussy and it just like sits in, soaks in it.
Yeah, if you're not thrusting, it's not intercourse. So if you just but how does it get in without at least one thrust and
exactly.
one withdrawal? But we named something in my column once saddlebacking. because after the big promotion of abstinence education under Clinton and then under Bush, right-wing fundamentalist Christian kids were told that they had to be virgins on their wedding nights, and they were also told that sex was only vaginal intercourse. So they all started having anal intercourse and thinking that they were still virgins because they'd only had anal, which means my husband is still a virgin. Despite my best efforts.
Oh my God. I love that. So you guys have been together for almost 25 years. That's fierce. And do you attribute the success of your marriage to all of your obviously great knowledge in sex?
No. Yeah, the secret of our quote unquote success is we just keep not breaking up or divorcing each other. It's really that simple. It's actually almost 30 years we've been together, and it's been, you know, sometimes when you're, you know, kind of prominent gay male couple, you've been together a long time, there's this public facing part of your relationship, which, you know, you put it out on Instagram, you put it out in different places, and it seems perfect and like without conflict because you don't put your fights on Instagram.
Yeah. Why would you?
We've had our ups and downs. It's never been boring. We've had breakup extinction level fights and thrown the D word in each other's faces, divorce, but we've always managed to work through it in the end, and we're still together, in part because we've allowed our relationship to evolve and change, and we haven't stood in each other's way. You know, Terry's a very different person now than he was when we met, and I'm a different person now than I was when we met, and I celebrate who he is now, and he celebrates who I am now, and we've managed to stay married because we can do that.
Work.
I took a little passage from your book where you talk about some people are alone, unquote, in the without a romantic partner sense of the term all their lives because they're too damaged, that's me, or too uncompromising, that's also me. But some people wind up alone, as the cliche goes. They're just unlucky in love. But the conventions of the advice column genre, like the conventions of the best friend relationship, require me, Dan Savage, to tell lonely people that there's someone out there for everyone and that they need to keep looking. So that, you know, that I am uncompromising and not necessarily damaged, but I've always gotten along so well with friends and found my companionship needs from them. And then I've always, and I didn't invite you on the show to ask you about my problems, but just I wanted to your take. But I've never had a shortage of sexual partners either. And they fulfill that need. I have just never.
That sounds wonderful. That sounds perfect.
I found that in the same person a few times, but it hasn't been my gist and it hasn't really been what I've looked for, you know?
We're told that everyone should want a romantic partner and sexual partner and a long-term committed relationship. And then people who that model doesn't make them happy and it isn't actually what they want, wind up making commitments that they can't keep or sabotaging relationships to get out of them because it's not what they want or who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, if what you've done, you know, close, intimate friends and getting sex elsewhere met your needs sexually and met your needs for intimacy and companionship, how do you have anything less than what I have? And how is what I have any better than what you have? It's not. And, you know, you ended the reading of that quote about some people being alone.
I'd rather stick with the friends. I'd rather have the friends.
Yeah. And I think that's great.
I'd rather stick with the friends because they're not going to
I'm not one of those
end.
Gay married, you know, guys who's like, I mean, everybody should want to be gay and married or that we're doing it better or smarter or more highly evolved. I celebrate gay relationships in all their difference and straight relationships. One of my straight brothers likes to say he's gayer than I am because he and his girlfriend have never lived together over 20 years and it's an open relationship and they've never married. And so he's more sort of old school gay than I am with my marriage and my husband and living together all these years.
So in doing a column for 30 years, is it 30?
Yeah.
So you started off, you know, with asking your readers to address their letters with "Hey, faggot," and your early columns were sassy and sarcastic. So your brand, I'm very familiar with your columns over the years, is frank, talk about sex, you know, and you're saying, address me as dear fag. We can't really speak frankly in a lot of circumstances now, can we?
I think we can. When I started writing Savage Love, one of the things that really set it apart was I let people use the words they actually use when they talk about their sex lives in print. Mm-hmm. And no one had really done that before. You didn't have to say in Savage Love, I performed fellatio upon my partner. You could say, I sucked that dude's dick, like you might in a bar with your friends if you're talking about your sex life. I think people are freer now to talk about sex and talk about their sexual interests. You know, it does seem that there's some tiptoeing that people feel like they have to do. Even I feel like I have to do. Like, you'll note in the book that often I'm talking to straight people, using gay examples, also talking to gay people, and I have to like back up and make sure everyone knows I'm talking about cis, straight, opposite sex couples. I go on digressions where I round everybody up and include everybody in all their, you know, wonderful and liberating variety. And that's me being very self-conscious that I have to be careful, more careful now about how I talk about these things and cautious to make sure and self-critical and self-scrutinizing to make sure I'm not excluding people or leaving people out. Even if I'm making a point about, you know, the averages and bell curves, I have to make sure that I'm citing everybody.
Well, I mean, I'm someone who is blasted, you know, as insensitive or whatever sometimes. And, you know, even the word cisgender, to me, that sounds like a word from, you know, trans therapy. And I really soured on the word when it has become, like, from the social justice warriors, a word that is like almost, it's like it's an insult if you are cisgender and you don't want to transition or you're not gender fluid or whatever. And I've told Peppermint this. I've said, you do know, right? Any movement that seeks out to bash or to say, die cis scum. I mean, cisgender is used so much now that it is actually abbreviated to cis. And I'm like, you do know that when you're bashing the over 95% of people that do not want sexual reassignment surgery, your movement may be doomed.
I don't think cis is necessarily bashing. It's just like someone can say fag with affection,
but someone
can say fag very hatefully. You know, when you see people
it's not said with affection.
When you see people saying
they don't say cis with affection, they say.
I think some people say it as a fact without like as a pejorative.
But when you see people spitting out
the way people spit out cishet on Twitter, it's understood that both those syllables are insulting. But I don't think it's always used that way. And sometimes, you know, for me in my column, helpful when I need to distinguish between trans issues and non-trans issues in a response or it comes up in a question to have cis. But I don't always qualify woman with cis woman necessarily or man with cis man. Because most everybody is cis. And so, yeah, sometimes I get in trouble there.
So, Dan, you know, Candace Bushnell is the Sex and the City as Savage Love would be to, are we going to have a television series, Dan? Would you be interested in that? How would you feel about that?
I don't think so.
Why?
Years ago, when Terry and I were new parents and together, we were approached about a reality show. They wanted to put cameras in our house, follow us around, pay us a lot of money. And we turned that down because we're not monsters and wouldn't do that.
This would be like a series that you would write and you could have all the critical control and not some cameras peeking into your life and taking one moment and distorting it and making it something that it's not. You know what I mean?
I would do that if I could be like Lena Dunham and I could write it and star in it and then cast the people to be my boyfriends that I wanted to make out with. Like I would so cast Lil Nas X as my boyfriend in three episodes. Like she cast Adam Driver. Like, my God, I want in on that. What a racket.
I mean, I would definitely, this series sounds, it sounds like much watch TV. I would love to watch this.
Yeah, me and Lil Nas X having an intergenerational relationship for a three episode arc where we spend the entire time in bed. I would like totally, if I could write that show, I would like agree to have my column on television.
Okay, heard. Who is this? Let's do it.
Who is this Lil Nas X that I keep hearing about?
He's like Lil Bo Peep, but like tall and black.
And bottom.
Sounds good.
And
like to
a and a bottom, apparently. Which he does not give me bottom vibes on it. I know he says he's a bottom, but I feel like Lil Nas X is the type that you take home to bottom, but like really, she really wants to top you. She just likes it. Because some people like being like light, saying I'm a bottom so they can be that girl. But mm-hmm. sometimes you're more suited to be a top, in my opinion.
What?
Or sometimes yes. people want
to want to subject themselves to bottom shaming?
Well, because now the perception, yeah, he's hot, and the perception okay. of, and nowadays,
so
speak for yourself, but I mean, I see from my circle of friends and folk and my friends, like it is empowering to be a bottom these days. There's not the same stigma attached to it as it was in like the 2000s when I first started having sex. Like, I just feel like there's more power. Like, bitch, I'm a bottom. I'm like, I'm a bad bitch. I'm a bottom. Like, to me, that's the stigma with bottoming these days, not the shameful, I'm less than, I'm subservient.
I love that kind of bottom. Give me a bossy bottom. Give me a dom bottom. Right. I am such right? a sub top for a dom bottom.
Girl, sit on the dick. Sit on that dick and own it, honey.
Dan, I there's lots of great advice in your book, and I love, love, love this. Quote, this is from Savage Love by Dan Savage. Go places, do things, even if you have to go alone. Go. You're likelier to meet someone if you're out of the house and moving through the world. Even if you never meet someone, going places and doing things means you'll have a rich and full active life regardless. I mean, that's wonderful. I mean, it's because we're in a lockdown. We're not in lockdown, but, you know, if we haven't been out and doing things, and bit by bit we can do more. Hopefully there won't be a winter, you know, research or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I have gotten really, really cozy at home. I mean, some of it's my age too, 2 years since the pandemic starts. But yeah, that's really great advice. It's like, go out, put yourself in situations to meet people. And even if you don't, you win.
Yeah. And even if you're with someone now, you might be alone again shortly. Like,
yeah,
the COVID epidemic should have reminded us all of that. You're one like runaway bus away from being single again. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have a life that's rich and rewarding, whether you have a partner or not, you're taking a real risk. Somebody can leave you. Somebody can drop dead. And then what have you got if all you wanted and all you've invested in and all you're about is your relationship?
Yeah. Dan, we could literally go on and talk to you forever, but unfortunately, time will not permit that. Listen, everyone listening to this podcast, go get Savage Love from A to Z by Dan Savage. It's also beautifully illustrated as well. Great advice about everything on sex, love, relationships, dating, ex-boyfriends, like your current boyfriend's DMing his ex-boyfriend. Yeah, there's probably advice about that. So make sure you go check it out.
And I also give advice every week on the Savage Love Cast, my weekly podcast, where people can check that out at savage.love.
I am subscribing literally right now.
Social media?
I'm on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage.
Website?
www.savage.love and at @FakeDanSavage on
Sounds
Twitter.
Sounds good.
Dan is trying to plug it, but he's like, say it again, Savage Love. Got it. Thank you so much, Dan. You've been fabulous, my dear.
Thank you, Monet. Thank you, Lady Bunny. It was a real honor to be on your show.
Right, and that was Sex Talk with Dan. Bunny, I got some really good viewpoints about things, especially with the open relationship thing. Bob and I have talked about this so much on our podcast. Because, you know, Bob has like, what, 4 boyfriends now? So Bob is currently like, and they're all open, and they're all polyamorous. So, but they've been open from day one. So that's such an interesting thing. And to hear Dan's input on how he would go about that, I thought was very interesting.
Yes. Well, I mean, he knows his stuff. I wonder how he knows about straight people fucking. I mean, he must have some very frank friends.
Maybe he's had straight sex.
No, I
Maybe Dan's had straight sex.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, that's true. He does have an interesting thing to say about, listen, anyone who is speaking frankly for decades is going to be occasionally called out as, you know, unpolitically correct. But,
right.
You know, the I mean, And especially anyone who works with humor, which there is a lot of in this wonderful book.
Oh, so you think you're funny?
In the wonderful book, not interview.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to make sure because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
No, I know I'm funny, bitch. That's why my Christmas show is sold out, except for December 22nd, 23rd, the Lori Beachman Theater.
Okay, so I want to read two reviews that we have because we asked people to chat about Kwanzaa. And if you ever want us to read some of your reviews on Apple Podcasts, you can go to the Ebony and Irony page and you can leave a review, a rating, and count us there. But there we have two new ones that I want to read. The first one is from Randy Seven. The title is Information Queens. Love it. Thank you for a breath of fresh air. It's so wonderful to hear two knowledgeable queens speak on touching issues that the media will not touch. Keep it up, girls. 5 stars.
Wow.
The next one is from Louie91.
Are you sure that was the right podcast? Was that review on our podcast, Ebony and Irony?
Yes, girl. And the next one is from Louie91. The title is My... In capital letters, Kwanzaa, 2 stars.
What does that mean? Girl, you were trying to say that you don't know any black people that celebrate Kwanzaa.
I don't.
Celebrate Kwanzaa.
And this is what Louie said. As someone who has celebrated and is surrounded by people who do as well, Monet saying she has no idea who celebrates it is extremely offensive, and I cried when I heard her say that. Imagine someone saying Christmas doesn't matter. People have said it, and I don't. It doesn't make me sad, and I don't care. I can only hope she apologizes. I'm shaking as I type this. Her dismissal of my experience is not okay. Okay, I did not dismiss anyone's experience about Kwanzaa. I said I have never met a black person who celebrates Kwanzaa, and as I sit here on this podcast again today, besides Louie, who commented on Apple, I have never met a black person who celebrates Kwanzaa. That's not dismissing your experience. That's not saying that Kwanzaa is terrible. That's not saying Kwanzaa is shit. I'm saying I've never met a black person who celebrates Kwanzaa.
Well, it's going to shock you, Monet, but I have never celebrated Kwanzaa either.
Oh, my God.
But Louie, I am so sorry that my co-host is so unacquainted with her own culture that she would make such a
statement. Kwanzaa's not my culture. Kwanzaa's not my culture.
Usually I'm the bitch that gets canceled, so read the fucking house down on swamp before it's all.
Louie, my intention was not to hurt your feelings about Kwanzaa. If you have your own personal feelings about Kwanzaa and how it's received in the world, that's your own thing. But as my experience, I can speak about my experience and my podcast about not meeting a black person who has celebrated Kwanzaa. That is not to shit on your experience. I hope you have the greatest Kwanzaa that has ever been a Kwanzaa this year. I hope that nothing but the greatest Kwanzaa blessings happen upon you this year. It still stands. I've never met a black person to celebrate Kwanzaa. I have never celebrated Kwanzaa, and that's just a fact of the matter.
I have, but I'm older. But you know what? I want to culturally appropriate Latino culture and just say that I would love to celebrate Christmas with Monet's head as a piñata.
Louie would like that as well. I'm sure Louie would like that experience as well.
Louie, come help me. Let's celebrate. Can I bring a piñata to Kwanzaa?
Oh my God. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're done here. Have a happy holiday season from Bunny and I. And B, please, please, please make sure you get Savage Love from ABC by Dan Savage. Great, great, great.
A podcast network.